moment, my life consists of morning coffee at Anne's pantry and making the dahlias grow.
I'm very fond of dahlias.
Really? Do you grow them too?
No, unfortunately. My wife says they attract earwigs.
What a shame. But she's quite right. Captain Mannering, may I say something?
Yes, of course.
It's rather personal.
That's all right.
Do you always wear spectacles?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Would you take them off for a moment?
That was a clip from Mum's Army, recently broadcast on BBC Radio 7. The only reason I played that as a rather unorthodox start to a podcast is because this was the first time I'd listened to this audio when it was on their website recently, and it was superb. It was, I would say, probably the best audio I have heard from the Dad's Army range. It really gave the actors an opportunity to show how well they really can act in something that isn't a completely straightforward comedy. Towards the end of this episode, it's almost a drama rather than a comedy. It's done in a bittersweet way, and it's absolutely fantastic. Arthur Lowe is outstanding. I recommend that if you have the opportunity to listen to this particular episode, that you take it, either get it from iTunes or get it from another source, but it is one of the best audio Dad's Armies I have heard.
Kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run. We are the boys who will stop your little game.
Welcome to another edition of the Dad's Army podcast. This is episode 9, and today is Sunday, the 1st of October, 2007. In a moment, Tony will be joining us to discuss the events that have made the headlines in the world of Dad's Army over the last fortnight, including a couple of front page references in the UK tabloids. We also announced details of our first phone-in, where you have the opportunity to take part in a future podcast. And as usual, we have some feedback we'd like to share with you. Lastly, we had a delayed featured episode discussion about guerrilla warfare.
I'm joined once again by Tony. Good evening, Tony. How are you doing?
Hi, James. All's well, thanks.
Welcome to our regular format of the podcast. We're reverting back to normal after our stage show special, podcast number 2. There will be a third special, it'll be a third and final special, whereby we'd like to change the format slightly and ask you to let us know what you think of the stage play if you've been to see it. So we're going to have a phone in. If you're interested in participating and having a conversation with either me or Tony, or both of us, about your experience at one of these performances, then please send us an email and I'll send you the details of how it will work. The email being warmington on c333@yahoo.co.uk.
These people don't know how lucky they are to be able to get a chance to speak to you today.
Yes.
We've got some Dad's Army in the news for you again. Dad's Army's made front page news of a couple of national papers. We've got the Sun newspaper on September the 18th, and the headline, this is the front page headline, is "Don't panic, your cash is safe with Northern Rock," says Chancellor. And there's a cartoon picture of Alistair Darling and Captain Mannering. I think they're pretending to be Wilson and Mannering. And Darling is saying, "Don't panic, Mr. Mannering." And Mannering is saying, "OK, Darling." We also got front page again, front page of the Daily Mail on 21st of September. It says, "Who do you think you're kidding, Mr. Darling?" And this is Richard Littlejohn again talking about the Northern Rock farce. And inside, Richard Littlejohn devotes a whole page to Dad's Army. He writes his own script of Dad's Army, but about the Northern Rock episode.
It's actually a really good article, I think, because he's put a lot of effort into writing this script. And if you read the script, you've got quite a few typical mannerisms, not just the clichés from each of the characters, but you can actually hear the actors say it in your head as you're reading the article. I just wonder how many other TV programmes actually get a brand new script and to bring it into a satirical interpretation of today's news 35 years after it, well, no, nearly 40 years now after it was last on TV.
James, do you want to type this all out and put it on the website for people to read?
I think it's probably slightly too involved for that. But if you have got a copy of the Daily Mail for whatever day it was now, you mentioned it earlier,
21st
Tony.
21st of September.
Yeah, it's well worth having a read. I think it gives quite a clear indication that Richard Littlejohn must be a fan of Dad's Army.
He clearly is. He picks up on a lot of the common jokes in Dad's Army. He is clearly a fan when you look at it.
I can't remember the last time Dad's Army got into the national press about something other than the stage play in recent months. And now we get two front page mentions within a week. Pretty good. Moving on, we're still talking about the stage play, as you would expect, given it's probably the most topical issue in the Dad's Army world at the moment. There were a lot of interviews prior to the stage play opening in Stevenage a month or so ago now, and now that the play has started, we've actually got a couple of reviews beginning to surface. And the first one is on the Beds, Hearts and Bucks website, and this is a three-page review, and it's written by a journalist called Jimmy Smallwood. And again, I'm afraid it's too long for us to read out in full. So what we'll do, we'll post a link on our website so that you can go and have a read of it. It's a fairly lukewarm review. It reads as if the reviewer really wanted to enjoy the play, but couldn't help himself but actually point out a few of the areas he thought could have been done slightly better. But he does praise the production as well for areas that he thinks are worthy of praise.
It's a very honest appraisal of this man's experience listening to the, or going to see the stage play.
He also notes that Jimmy Perry was in the audience the evening that he went, so this must have been, I think, either the opening night or a press viewing that he attended, perhaps. I've also been contacted via the Whispers on Warmington website by another journalist called Austin Ruddy, who's written an article, again another review, for the Leicester Mercury. And again, I won't read everything out, I will just post the link on our webpage. But there are three paragraphs here that I will read out, and perhaps we can discuss those, Tony. Emmerdale's Peter Martin played a likeable Captain Mannering, but somehow managed to make Arthur Lowe's Mannering seem a bit more agile and fiery, which mirrors very much your feelings that we discussed in the last podcast.
Yep. Yep.
Leslie Dirty Den Grantham played a slightly colder and distant version of Wide Boy Spiv Private Walker, and in brackets he's written, there's those dreaded comparisons again, obviously because comparisons are going to be the first thing people do when appraising the stage play.
Yeah, I didn't think Leslie Grantham did much wrong.
No. I agree. I disagree with him there. I think the Walker portrayal was very good, and I warmed to him probably a lot quicker or a lot more than some of the other characters.
Yeah.
Austin continues, but it was the supporting cast that really made the show, most notably Kern Faulkner's wily, cantankerous and gurning Private Fraser, and Richard Tate's muddling busybody Corporal Jones.
Kern Faulkner as Fraser was superb. Jones was still good, but less convincing.
Yeah, I agree with him on both of those. I thought Fraser and Jones' portrayal were the best thing at the stage play that we saw. Another piece of news that's about a theatre production, but not the one that we've been banging on about for the last few episodes, Tony. This was sent to us by Carl Hinton. Thanks, Carl, for sending us the link. It's to an article in the Leamington Observer, which again I'll post on our webpage, and it's about another production that's being put on from the 22nd of September to the 28th of September, so by the time you hear this it will have finished. But it was a week-long run of a stage play in Rugby at the Rugby Theatre. There's got a completely different cast to the other stage play. There's an actor called Neil Morgan playing Captain Mannering and another actor called Tom Browning playing Sergeant Wilson. But it just seems to me, I'm not quite sure whether or not all this is in the wake of the resurgent Dad's Army seem to be receiving in media circles, in the newspapers, on TV, due to the stage play. But, I mean, Dad's Army is mentioned far more frequently than it ever used to be. Lastly, we've got two bits of feedback. First of all, we've received another review on our iTunes page, which is great. We've now got three reviews on the page, so please sign on to iTunes if you do listen to us using that podcatcher. You just need to click on write a review, even if it's only two lines, to say this is not a terrible podcast. Or if you think it is a terrible podcast, as somebody else thinks it is, then you can say that too. You can also leave comments about each of the individual episodes of the podcast on our webpage, which is www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com. We've received another email from Nick Rich, who's quite keen on sending feedback in to us. And again, I won't read all of the email, but there's some comments that I will read. First of all, he mentions our features episode this fortnight, which is Guerrilla Warfare, and he's given us some comments about it, and I'll just read those now. Guerrilla Warfare has some great lines, such as when Mannering has a go at Wilson for wearing eau de cologne and calls him decadent. Yes, I think that was just another one of Mannering's jibes at Wilson.
Yep, but, being posh.
Yes, seems to always get a jibe in where he can. And Nick also highlights the other line, which was a Fraser line, about Godfrey moving swiftly, and obviously it was mentioned that he couldn't move swiftly across country stark naked, which I think also was one of the better lines that was included in this episode. Something Kelsey mentioned that I wasn't aware of was that... I'll just read what he says. But did you know the scene in where Hodges gets covered in yellow custard? Well, it might have been custard, but I think in the episode it was actually supposed to be yellow paint. Bill Pertwee had to go to hospital as he got a lot in his ear and he had to be cleaned out. And that's news to me. But I suppose that's just an occupational hazard of having paint poured over you, I guess. Nick also mentions that he'd give Guerrilla Warfare a mark out of 5, but unfortunately he doesn't actually say what mark he did give it out of 5. He's just said, I'll give Guerrilla Warfare N out of 5. But judging by your comments, Nick, it looks like that you did quite enjoy that particular episode.
And we want to let Nick know that the full stop key on his keyboard isn't working. We think someone ought to tell him.
Indeed.
Pay attention, everybody. Private Fraser is going to tell us the story of the old empty barn. Carry on, Fraser.
Right. The story of the old empty barn. Well, there was nothing in it.
That story of the old empty barn is a clip from our featured episode this week. It's called Guerrilla Warfare, and it's episode 3 in series 7. There are 9 series altogether. That's from series 7. James, what's special about this episode?
There's a few things. I mean, I wasn't overly excited about reviewing this episode, I have to say, but again, as in all of these episodes, there's always a couple of things that you can really appreciate. I think Pike and Wilson get fairly good outings this time. I think their characters are given good lines to say, particularly during the first 7 or 8 minutes in the parade ground, where Mannering becomes increasingly horrified. First of all, Wilson getting a tan, Pike wearing his scarf again, and, you know, Godfrey bringing the long and Ida down. Mannering seems to be surprised that his platoon are going out on a picnic, where it seems to be like a weekend away rather than a military operation.
Yes, talking of Wilson getting tan, I've just scribbled down here about when Mannering notices Wilson not paying attention, and Wilson says, "While you were chatting away over there,
yeah,
we thought he'd get a tan or something like that." But did you catch him laughing? Wilson actually laughing just as Mannering's about to confront him on it, and I'm sure that's something which could have been an outtake, but they decided to leave it in.
Yeah, maybe it was. No, it was quite funny. I mean, Wilson, I think, especially towards the latter series, really excels at his vagueness, a whimsical attitude towards soldiering.
Yes, we've also got Telfrin Thomas in this episode, and I've noted he was in a couple of episodes beforehand, but this is his first episode as Private Cheeseman, I believe.
Oh, really? I wasn't too sure. I realise this is the first episode from Series 7 that we've had a chat about, and of course I noticed Cheeseman, because the only Dad's Army episodes I've been watching are those that we've been due to have discussions about, and of course I suddenly thought, oh, okay, there's no Walker here, and there's Cheeseman, and yes, Mannering did call him Private Cheeseman. The one before this was A Man of Action.
So Telfrin Thomas is in that as Mr. Cheeseman, but he's only, I think, a photographer from the local paper in that episode, whereas now he's a member of the platoon.
Yeah, I think he's introduced to both the platoon and the audience in A Man of Action. I think that was his first outing. What do you make of his character in this episode, then? Because he's given quite a few lines.
I'm actually not a fan of Mr. Cheeseman's character. Not keen, to be honest, and
What's the reason why?
Too silly.
You think?
Too silly, yeah.
Oh, I disagree, I have to say. I mean, I like Cheeseman's character.
I thought you might like him, because I think you've got something in common with him.
Really?
Any ideas?
I'm not Welsh. I'm not a journalist.
Say, indeed. Indeed.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
I think the similarities between me and Cheeseman are probably slightly less than the similarities between you and Wilson. But possibly. I won't say indeed. I like Cheeseman's character primarily because, one, he was a bit of a shake-up in the platoon, and that probably reflected the way it happened in real life as well with the established group of actors. And secondly, because he got quite a lot of laughs. I think his lines were quite funny. I just like the way that he comes into the platoon, and you can't compare him to any other character, because he is totally different. People often say he was brought in as a replacement for James Beck, and maybe that was the case to make up the numbers, but he certainly didn't replace his character in any way, because he's so totally different. I did like him. I thought it was probably a little bit strange. You've got a neurotic Scotsman in Fraser, and there you have just as neurotic a Welshman. But I don't think he was that silly. You said he was silly. I mean, I think you look at Jones' character, particularly in this episode, actually, and Jones' character was far sillier than Cheeseman's.
Yes. Yeah, I've never appreciated Mr. Cheeseman in the platoon, to be honest. Never mind, each their own. I think what I don't laugh, other people probably love, as you've just, I think, demonstrated.
Okay, from the outset of this episode, again, stemming from the opening scene, the parade grounds, Mannerin seems a little bit surprised that Wilson managed to guess that he was the highly important secret agent, because he seems surprised that Wilson would have predicted him to be so pompous.
Wilson would say, how terribly unexpected, or something like that.
Something like that. I think he said it was a shot in the dark, or it was just a guess, or something along those lines, and Mannerin comes across as impressed, you know, that he guessed. And of course, that's countered quite neatly a little bit later on, when Mannerin's talking about Captain Square's failure in the same task a week earlier, and then he actually calls Captain Square a pompous ass. Just wondered, I mean, how similar, really, are Captain Square's characters and Mannering's? You know, there's a lot of crossover there, I think.
Yes, I think, although Mannering is the nicer character, more down to earth.
Yeah, I think he's less of a caricature, perhaps. But there are some times when Geoffrey Lumsden underplays Square. You know, you wonder whether or not he could be doing a very similar thing to Mannering, and perhaps they are a little bit too similar in order to be able to get on with each other.
I think when Captain Square wrote a letter to Mannering in another episode, Mannering read the letter, and it was signed off Captain Square, and Mannering scribbled on the bottom, pompous idiot.
Yeah, you're talking about Battle of the Giants, I think.
Yes, that'll be the one.
Yeah, that is quite funny, I have to admit. One of the other things I thought, which is probably not such a strong comment really, it's not quite a criticism, but it's just an observation. Seems to be a lot of cliches in this episode. Now, I'm not sure whether or not it's just because you and I are used to discussing earlier episodes, but this is a season 7 one, so maybe we're familiar with all of these a little bit more now. But you get Jones out of step, you know, you have Mannerin's hat and glasses coming askew.
Yes.
The reference to Pike's scarf, Fraser is told to stop rolling his eyes, and yes. Hodges is just reduced to a gibbering idiot, really, this time. All of that is standard Dad's Army mythology that's already been established through its previous success, and I think by this episode, it just seemed like, well, they weren't too sure how to fill 30 seconds here or 30 seconds there. They're just, you know, throwing something that guarantees a laugh.
They've got so many of these regular jokes that come up. There's such a large repertoire of them that they can actually just pick a handful of them and throw them into episodes, or sprinkle a few in each episode. For me, I think they get away with doing that because I still laugh at them.
I think they can get away with them in some episodes, you know, when it's countered with some other funny lines, and I think they just about manage it with this one. I mean, Fraser's lines, I think, were hilarious, and he had very, very few. You know, he didn't have much of a speech. I mean, he's even a typical Fraser story that you began to think the old empty barn story was going to develop into was quite short, but it was hilarious, and I think John Lurie attacked those lines fantastically well. He was laughing as well. He had a big smile, and I think it's always good when you see John Lurie smile, because it's so rare, you know, and his face lights up and it completely changes when he smiles.
So. Well, you say when they sprinkle these jokes into the episodes, another thing they've done before is some of Wilson's friends, the names of Wilson's friends. it just made me laugh when Mannering quotes Wilson's friends, as he's done previously. This friend's called Fruity Buttmaster. And I just think they, because of Wilson being public school, I don't know much about public school, but I guess they do give sort of strange nicknames to each other, but Fruity Buttmaster is one of Wilson's friends.
I
don't like the way that Mannering quotes it.
Mannering decides, he picks and chooses his moments to listen to Wilson anyway, and the only reason why he decided to recant that. It was because, obviously, it posted Captain Square in a bad light. But, yes, you're right. The selection of Wilson's public school friends, the names are quite inventive. I think that happens elsewhere as well, but I can't quite remember the names of the episodes where that happens.
I think We Know Our Onions was one of them, but I can't remember the name of the Wilson's friend in that episode.
Mm. What did you make of the Verger and Hodges in this episode?
Verger and Hodges? Well, firstly, you've got the Verger and no Vicar. Mm. No Vicar in this one for some reason.
I don't think there was much place for the Vicar, to be honest, because he wouldn't have run around the countryside. That would have been out of character, I think.
Yes. Yeah, they've got a weak part in the episode, haven't they?
I thought so too. I think the roles were acted quite well, particularly the Verger's reaction when he realises he's being followed by a gorilla. The rest of their part feels like it's just been inserted. It doesn't really feel as if it adds anything to the script, and I think this is one of the few that could have done without Hodges and the Verger quite easily.
They're definitely very minor parts.
They're superfluous.
In the episode. I suppose where they get covered in paint's quite good.
Well, that looked to me as if Bill Pertwee was expecting, as clearly he was, to be covered in yellow dye, and he was almost moving in line so that they could pour it over him.
I'll try this out with you one day and then see how you react to it.
Well, I know, I'll try and, as most people would, try and get away from it, but, you know, it looked quite obvious to me that Pertwee was trying to walk into it. I just didn't think it was that funny. I mean, Hodges gets covered in dye again, or instead of falling in the water this time. Mildly funny. There were lots of other supporting roles in here. I mean, Dad's Army usually
has...
Eric
Chitty.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Eric Chitty.
The man in the shoot shop.
From Boots, Boots, Boots.
Mentioned that Eric Chitty had took part in other episodes, and I couldn't think of any at the time, but yeah.
Yes.
Shoe shop man. He's brilliant.
It was good. A very distinctive voice. So, and of course, I suppose Boots, Boots, Boots was long enough ago for people not to remember that they'd heard the voice and seen the character before. Yeah, and he played the chap from the RSPCA this time. That was one. We mentioned this last time when we talked about A Soldier's Farewell with Joy Allen. She was back as the woman in the pram in the non-speaking role.
With now the pram. Yes.
Woman with
she
the pram.
Wasn't in
yep.
the pram. She had the pram.
Yes, she wasn't in the pram, no. It was just a bottle and in the pram. And Joy Allen, she played the Clippy in A Soldier's Farewell. So they were using or reusing some of their minor extra characters.
Well, they got away with it because I just only didn't notice. So.
Oh, there wasn't a close-up of Joy Allen's face at all. She had no words to speak. It was, you know, it could have been anyone, but they clearly liked reusing people they knew, which I thought was quite good.
What is it with nuns?
Nuns, I think just because maybe there was an obsession about nuns in World War II being disguised as parachute troops. I think someone in the War Office said that they could be, you know, parachute troops could be disguised as nuns and taken to heart or remembered by Jimmy Perry when he was in the Home Guard, and maybe he's highly suspicious of nuns, who knows. But they referred to on a number of occasions, aren't they, throughout the series.
Oh yeah.
That was probably the least convincing gorilla I have ever seen.
Yeah, I don't really like any best part of the episode with the gorilla in it. I'm not, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things. I thought the only thing that made me laugh, as I mentioned earlier on, was the Verger's reaction when he realised the gorilla was behind. But just because I think he managed to express surprise in a really comic way. And the other part, which really I don't understand, is why on earth did he end up on the back of a motorbike? Could you figure that out?
Well, no, there's lots of unanswered questions in this episode, actually, but I did laugh when the syringe went into Mannering instead of the gorilla.
Oh, I thought it was Jones being stupid again.
And that did take me by surprise.
The fact that you found it funny took you by surprise. I thought the only reason as to why they decided to keep that in and include it was to give Pike another really good line, which was Uncle Arthur, Mr. Mannering's got a monkey on his back or something like that, and that I thought was quite funny, and Pike got a number of good lines throughout the entire episode, as did Mannering. He got another, you know, not very often, but he gets some unique lines rather than his stock repertoire of lines that always gets laughs, and the bunch of idiots lines I thought was hilarious.
Those he thinks he's managing a bunch of idiots.
Just the way that Arthur Lowe paced that line, you know, he says, oh, I've come to know these men over the years and got to know them, and I can't help feeling that they're a bunch of idiots. And I just think it was the way that he paced it and did it slowly was really good. Moving on then, I think lastly the only point which I had was that I thought Jones, as you probably can tell, Jones's role in this I think was reduced to almost pure slapstick. I mean, he offered nothing to this episode.
So he said it was a real meal, didn't he?
Yeah, that was the only thing that I thought was reasonably, you know, it wasn't stock footage for Jones's lines. He was doing a lot of waffling. He talked about counterfeit agents all the time. He was talking about a gorilla on the loose. I mean, maybe that's funny. Maybe it's just me who doesn't find Jones' character funny. You know, he even held up a gorilla at the end of the episode with a gun. I mean, how silly is his character? I just don't buy him as much as I buy the rest of the characters.
I think we're heading for a low score with this episode, aren't we?
Well, it's funny, because had I given it a score without actually trying to watch it again first, I'd have probably said, yeah, maybe a 2. But I really did appreciate the empty barn story. I did like Jones. I mean, I'm just going to contradict myself here. I did like Jones when he said, gorillas are African, why is he speaking English? I thought that was daft, but it was mildly funny. And I like the way Pike worked at the beginning. So, in hindsight, this one scrapes a 3 for me. How about you?
I've written my score down just so I don't change it. It's a 2.
You have gone for the 2?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do a better episode next time.
I think it's good that we go through them all, and it's understood even if we at some point, Tony, give an episode a 1, and there's a couple that I know that I will give a 1. It doesn't mean that we dislike it, it just means that they're nowhere near as good as the other episodes. This one was notable for its outside, or its location shooting as well, and that usually, I think, ups the ante and makes me enjoy the episode a little more, but it just didn't work on this occasion. So I'm afraid, yeah, it's a 3 for me and a 2 for you.
That's basically it for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. We're on our holidays now for about 4 weeks, so won't be one in 2 weeks' time, but we'll be back on the 27th or 28th of October. When we come back, we're going to play an interview with the landlord of the Six Bells pub. We went over to Thetford and interviewed a really kind gentleman over there, and we'll play you his interview. Also, if you've been to see the stage play and would like to share your views in a phone-in, please would you email us at our usual address, warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk, and we'll see if we can get your views onto a podcast coming up soon. Lastly, when we come back, our featured episode is going to be Asleep in the Deep, and as always, we welcome your views. That really is it for this podcast. We said we're on our holidays now. We're not going on holiday together, I will add. But we will be back, as I say, in a month's time. Until then, bye for now. That is it now for this podcast. As I say, we'll be back in a month, and we look forward to doing it all again. Listen to that again.